Britain feels broken, but how do we fix it?
Westminster just doesn't seem to have the answers, but we have found some people who do.
Join me, journalist Becca Hudson.
And me, the former MP Ed Vasey, for How I'd Fix.
From the price of a pint to the housing crisis, this is the show where we take an alternative look at the problems plaguing the nation.
And hear practical solutions from those in the know. Catch new episodes of How I'd Fix wherever you get your podcasts. Rebuilding Britain starts here.
Good evening and welcome to the Independent Republic of JJ with talk on TV, on radio, online and on your smart speaker. Coming up, war at a crossroads. Israel's military chief has said the strike that killed seven aid workers, including three Brits, was a mistake that followed misidentification. Plus, ministers are facing a revolt from Conservative MPs over plans to criminalise homeless people. That smell, absolutely unbelievable. And a biological man is suing a health boss because he wants both female and male genitalia. Oh, and he wants us to pay for it. Good evening, Britain, and welcome to the Independent Republic of JJ Ennis Yobe, right here on Talk TV. It is the final night of my dictatorship as General Graham returns to the barracks tomorrow. But tonight, I'm going out with a bang. We'll have a first look at Rishi Sunak's exclusive tell-all interview with The Sun, and we'll debate whether Britain is becoming too dangerous because we're refusing to have difficult conversations. Plus, are you willing to spend 150 quid to live like a royal? You're watching My Independent Republic. Let's kickstart the show. The Prime Minister has called for an urgent, transparent investigation into the deaths of three brave British aid workers killed by an Israeli airstrike in Gaza. James Henderson, John Chapman and James Kirby were among seven people killed whilst working for the humanitarian group World Central Kitchen. Israel's Prime Minister said the strikes were unintended, but also said this happens in wartime. Meanwhile, the head of the Israeli Defence Forces has apologised for the catastrophic blunder.
This incident was a grave mistake. Israel is at a war with Hamas, not with the people of Gaza. We are sorry for the unintentional harm to the members of WCK. We share in the grief of their families, as well as the entire World Central Kitchen organization, from the bottom of our hearts.
Joining me now with all the latest information is Gareth Brown, who has been in the Middle East following the conflict for us. Gareth, can you please explain to us how the deaths of these aid workers even happened?
Well, it's an incident that has really, you know, shaken the community, shaken everyone in Israel, in Gaza too. What we know is the day before yesterday, later evening, this aid team had been to a makeshift pier off the coast of Gaza, and they'd been unloading aid. There was eight of them, and they were travelling in three separate vehicles. And as they came away from the pier where they'd been unloading aid, they were fired upon. Reports suggest that one airstrike hit a vehicle. That vehicle stopped. They tried to bring the injured out of that vehicle and put them into a second vehicle. That second vehicle was then hit by an airstrike. And then a third vehicle, part of the same convoy, was pursued for about a mile, maybe a little bit more, and hit by a third airstrike fired from an Israeli drone. Now, what we know is that there were no survivors. Everyone was killed. And just a few hours ago, the bodies of those, the seven foreign aid workers killed, including three Brits, passed into Egypt.
So how have the Israeli government responded to this news and this tragic event?
I mean, they've come out on multiple levels and said that there would be an investigation. We've heard that from the Prime Minister. We've heard that from, you know, the very top levels of the Israeli Defence Forces. And there's anger, I think, domestically in Israel, but it doesn't seem to be quelling the international criticism and international pressure. You know, we have countries in Europe, even in the UK, there's discussions about suspending arms exports to Israel. So, you know, this is seven people who have died, or eight people who have died in a war in which, you know, more than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, over 1,000 Israelis have been killed. But this small number of people seems to have changed things quite drastically.
Well, you say this small number, there's 196 other aid workers who have been killed in Gaza during this conflict. This seems incredibly reckless from a country that boasts having one of the greatest defences in the world.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point. I mean, you know, the language we're hearing is that this is a tragic accident, but you only have to look through the last 6 months of this conflict in Gaza, and we can see, you know, there's really a pattern. You know, we saw in December there was a tragic incident where the IDF shot dead three hostages, three Jewish Israeli hostages who were attempting to escape. In January, another UK NGO, Medical Aid for Palestinians, its warehouse, which was located within a deconfliction zone, same as, you know, a similar sort of area to where this airstrike, or these airstrikes took place, was nearly hit. You know, repeatedly, we see these incidents where aid workers are killed and they're killed in deconfliction zones. So a lot of people, I think, both in the US, in Israel, in the UK, are starting to, you know, say maybe there's more to this. Maybe this wasn't just a tragic accident. Maybe that we need to examine the culture of the IDF, the rules of engagement in Gaza. And I think there's a lot of concern there, even from within the Israeli security establishment, that those rules of engagement, whatever they are, simply aren't being followed by the commanders on the ground.
So almost 200 aid workers killed, over 30,000 estimated dead in Gaza. Is it time Israel just reevaluated their tactics at trying to destroy Hamas? Because clearly there are far too many casualties currently.
I mean, like, a lot of the focus at the minute is on Rafah. That's that final city in the south of Gaza. And you know, discussions about an Israeli offensive going into Gaza, going into Rafah. You know, and this is something that the Americans are really sort of warning against. You know, there's you know, over a million people there. They're sort of hemmed up against the border with Egypt. I think the risk is now that if Israel does continue going after Hamas the way it's done, you know, with such huge casualties on the Palestinian side, you're starting to see ripples that go beyond Israel and Palestine. You know, we can look at Lebanon, where I am right now. We're seeing increased tensions here. We're seeing, you know, signs that a war might be on its way here. We're seeing Hezbollah fighters being killed, over 250 killed since October 7th. This isn't a dormant front in this war. We're seeing tensions rise in the occupied West Bank, where settler violence is reaching record levels, and, you know, the Palestinian economy there has shriveled. We can look at Jordan, where Hamas's popularity has gone through the roof, and they've had quite violent protests over the last week and a half. So I think one of the real issues is if Israel keeps going at the rate it has been going since October, then this no longer becomes an Israel-Palestine-Gaza problem. And actually, we start to see regional instability just sort of go through the roof.
Yeah, well, thank you, Gareth. And I hope we see a resolution across the whole Middle East that works for everyone there. Let's cross over now to a journalist based in Israel, Natalie Blenford. Natalie, how are people in Israel reacting to this tragedy or this accident, as Israel are claiming?
Well, first of all, good evening. So I think mixed reactions, a lot of sadness, a sense of disbelief that such a tragic event has occurred. Israeli people do take a lot of pride in their army, because the army here is people's sons, people's daughters. Of course, that's the case in every army, but it's an army that does come from a good place. It values life. This is what every Israeli that I have ever spoken to believes. So when there's something like this that happens, there's a lot of sadness. And I think there's also enormous anger. I will say Israelis are very angry with the prime minister, who has been leading this country for 6 months in the war and for many, many years before. And people are calling for elections. There's big protests taking place tonight in Jerusalem outside the prime minister's residence. People are calling for an election, saying enough is enough. You are not protecting the country. You're not guiding us out of this war. You're not getting our hostages home. And now the entire world hates us. This is certainly how it feels. So people are calling for him to resign or for there to be general elections. So it's not like the people of Israel are ignoring this and saying, oh, never mind. That's not what's happening. There is a reaction here, and it's a bad one, as in people appreciate that it's a bad, bad situation. That's my impression.
Well, we are seeing increased anti-Semitism attacks across the world against Jewish people who have nothing to do with Israel or Netanyahu, which is completely wrong. But why is Netanyahu then stoking the fires? Why is he tweeting Al Jazeera will no longer be broadcast from Israel? Why is he censoring the truth that's happening over there?
I mean, I can't speak for him. Many, many people in this country would love to be able to understand what's going through his mind. As I say, he's not really a very popular figure here, certainly not with left-leaning people, liberal people, peace-loving people. Many of the people that lived in the southern communities were peaceniks. They were not pro-BB kind of people. So I can't say why he's saying that. But there is a feeling here that the narrative is being shaped against Israel in every outlet of Western media. I mean, you know, I can't really, I'm here in Israel, so I don't see as much of it. I haven't been able to, you know, keep abreast of absolutely everything. But it, just to say, in your previous correspondent just mentioned the numbers of dead people in Gaza. And he mentioned there are 30,000 dead Palestinians. So that might be the case. But what's missing there is any differentiation between terrorists and civilians. And I'm not here to defend Israel's war conduct, but I will say that you have ignored there that about 10,000 of them are terrorists. Of course, the other 20,000 is tragic. And as a human being, I would agree that that's absolutely awful. But there's no differentiation here. And that's why I think the Israeli government is so frustrated with some of the Western media, because they just bandy together all the numbers. It's like there's 30,000 Palestinians. That doesn't take into account that some of those are Hamas. And as the IDF spokesperson said last night in his apology video, we are at war with Hamas, not the people of Gaza.
Natalie,
and it's incredibly difficult conditions.
Natalie, you make a good point, but I think people would then argue, are we saying it's okay to kill two innocent people to get one Hamas terrorist? Well, anyway, earlier today, in an exclusive interview on Talk TV, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak addressed the deaths of those three British aid workers in an interview with The Sun's Harry Cole.
Yeah, it's a awful, awful tragedy to think that these were brave Brits who were actually risking their lives to bring aid to people in need in Gaza, to have lost their lives in these circumstances is tragedy. My thoughts, obviously, with their family and their friends at this time. You know, I spoke to Prime Minister Netanyahu last night and was very clear with him that the situation is increasingly intolerable, and what we urgently need to see is a thorough, transparent investigation into what has happened, but also a dramatic increase in the amount of aid getting into Gaza, removing the barriers, but also closer work with aid agencies to make sure things like this don't happen again.
And you can see the full extended interview with the Prime Minister on Never Mind the Ballots with The Sun's Harry Cole tonight at 8 p.m. right here on Talk TV. You are watching The Independent Republic of JJ. Coming up, we are heading to the world of woke. Trump is causing conservative outrage yet again. And is Britain too soft? Welcome back. You're watching The Independent Republic of JJ Nisiobi live on Talk TV. It's now time for this.
The World of Woke.
Former Ofsted head Amanda Spielman stood down last year, claiming the organisation and schools had too much focus on staff with their wellness and tired maxim of hashtag be kind threaded throughout the system. She went on to say there's far too much concern with woke well-being than the actual users of such public services, i.e. the school pupils. Joining me to discuss this in the studio is broadcaster and friend Narinda Kaur. Narinda, with the strikes going on with teachers and stuff and they're being under pressure, is this woman right? Is Amanda right? Is this country become a place where you can't just have difficult conversations anymore?
I think there's a lot to unpack in this. And had I not listened to the podcast that you did with Rachel Johnson, where she says this, I think...
Stop promoting other people's podcasts.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, right? This is where stop she it. Said these comments. So had I not listened to that, I would have said, how dare she? She's insensitive. And she is. Because look, a teacher committed suicide on her watch. But when you listen to the podcast, she explains... And it's still insensitive. She doesn't really take accountability, but she's trying to say that actually, when we're trying to protect kids, we have to be able to have difficult conversations and create a balance. Except she has to take accountability. A woman committed suicide. So there is a fault in the system. And the other thing she was saying was that actually, all organisations, Metropolitan Police, they have inspections. But when the report comes out not in their favour, it falls on broader shoulders. When it's a school, it's just one person. So she does acknowledge that. However, come on.
Is Ofsted needed anymore? Like my teacher, I spoke to my teacher He's probably watching now. Mr. Ewing, fantastic teacher from Hagley RC High. He's moved schools now, I think, somewhere else. But I remember speaking to him a few months ago about this, and he was saying, basically, when you know it's Ofsted coming round, the teachers all know that the inspectors come in. So it's like you're putting on a new lick of paint, you're making sure that everything's perfect, and you're terrified as a teacher.
Well, if you
don't get that outstanding...
And it's not just the week before, this goes on for months before. And actually, even the wording, inadequate, poor, below, it's terrible. And if that's a one head teacher... Come on, it needs a whole overhaul.
But then you're saying that Amanda is right in saying we have to be able to have these conversations and say, well, actually, your school is terrible and I'm going to give it one star. School's great.
No, I think what she's saying is that she was taking no accountability and having no humility. At the end of the day, she was talking about a system. She was talking about a procedure as if humans aren't involved. And well, we shouldn't be too bothered about adults. Adults should be able to take whatever we tell them because it's children we're protecting. But she wasn't really taking into account adults also. I know people aren't going to like it who watch this show. Have feelings. You can't just say, you're inadequate. It needs a whole overhaul. It really does. Because they come in like they're, they come in like the army. And she was also trying to say, actually, the inspectors are very nice people and they look at things with compassion. They don't. What if you get a bad inspector who's actually quite horrible?
Well, listen, I understand what you're saying about the teacher who committed, who took her own life.
Is it Ruth Perry?
I understand that. But again, these difficult conversations we have to have are that the priority has to be the kids. That's got to be it. You've got two kids yourself. The priority has to be, are my kids in a decent school? Are my kids getting taught properly?
Yes, but I don't also want my kids to be in a school that the teachers are that petrified of some Ofsted inspector coming who knows nothing about the school and going, tick, 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 no, we're downgrading you. That's a lot of pressure. Yeah. That's not correct. There's got to be... We've got to look at this differently.
But this culture of not being able to have difficult conversations...
I think
you receive it on social media all the time.
Yeah.
You say a statement on X...
Yes.
And then everyone starts harassing you.
Oh, I get a complete pile-on.
You get a pile-on.
I kind of like winding them up as well now as well.
Yeah,
I do.
But is social media not part of this problem that we can't have honest conversations because people are so polarised on every single thing? If you say... If people are now scared to say the truth because they're scared they'll get attacked. Luckily, here...
Well, I'm not scared of saying the truth. We're not scared of saying the truth. I don't think people are scared enough of saying the truth. But I think what Amanda Spielman was saying in that podcast, she was also referring to, the school with Birbal Singh, where she said the one Muslim student, and she also brought up, and this was really interesting, I didn't know about this, a school in Birmingham that is semi-faith, it's not an Islamic school, but it was mostly Muslims, and actually they were given an inadequate report because female students were actually being treated second-class citizens compared to male. And she was saying that actually in schools... It's got to not just be, we've got to be able to compromise, and parents aren't willing to compromise these days, and it should just be about the education. I do kind of agree with that.
Right, let's move on to Scotland.
Oh,
You know, what about this hate bill that everyone's talking about? But one of our people from our parish here at Talk Sport, Adam McCoist, he has mocked the new hate bill, actually. He's been pretty scathing about it and pretty direct. Let's have a listen to what Adam McCoist said about it.
We've got a hate bill, by the way. A hate bill's been passed in the country yesterday, and I can guarantee you, next Sunday at Ibrox, I, along with 48,000, will be committing a breach of that hate bill in the particular Rangers Celtic game that we're all going to. Yeah. It's madness!
He's right. He is right.
God, JJ, how can you say he's right?
He's right.
Ali McCoy's, what world are you living in?
Real world.
No, okay, so therefore we should never have laws. We should never try and...
What are you talking about?
He's actually admitting by saying that...
He's going to go to a football match and he's going to say hateful things.
And that's okay. That's not okay, Ali McCoy.
Why is it not okay?
Shall I tell you why it's not okay?
Why we
do need a hate bill? Love
and hate are natural emotions. It's okay to go to a football match and shout abuse at some players. That's okay. It's okay to go to a football match and shout abuse at fans. Yes, it is.
That's not saying it's okay to do racial abuse.
No, it's not the same thing. It ain't the same thing. If I see a red-headed player on the pitch, I'm going to shout something about him being ginger.
No, you're not. So you know,
I am going to.
You know more about football. I don't even know much. Celtic and Rangers. It's actually Irish racism.
Yeah.
They're singing songs potato famines and go back home. It's not acceptable. Because if you accept that, you accept this. Also, let me give you another point of view. Okay, well, you've got, I don't know, motorway laws. You can only drive 70 on a motorway. Mm-hmm. Are you going to say, well, I'm not going to ignore that. I'm just going to go along and do what I want.
I do what I want. Right. I do 75 sometimes on the motorway.
Right. So, okay, but that's against the law.
I'm not saying it's a law, but I'm still going
to
do it.
But we have a law to try to save lives on a motorway. You drive 70, you're not allowed to drive above that. You can try and break the law. So Ali McCoist is just basically saying, we're all horrible, we're all racist, and we're going to say what we want. How
it's
can
a
do...
football match. Things are very different at football
is
matches.
Is he a presenter on Talk?
Talk Sport, yeah.
Wow.
He's a former footballer. He knows the game pretty well.
He knows what he's talking about. But he's actually...
He knows what he's talking about. The point he's making is that the law, this new hate crime bill, is not going to go there and arrest all those football fans for chanting Hobbs
against
them.
Well, of course not, but you have to have some kind of law. We have a Race Relations Act, I still get called the P word, and I'm sure you get called the N word. You still got to have an act in place.
No, of course you do, they're too scared of me. It doesn't happen.
No, but it does happen to people.
Look, Narinda, you have to have a law in place.
Narinda,
I think Adam McCoy makes a very good point. And by the way, I'm just joking about speeding on the motorway. I always stick to the speed limit.
I'm a very law-abiding citizen.
Narinda, you'll be joining us a bit later. Thank you for now. And that was the explosive World of Woke.
The World of Woke.
On to our showbiz roundup. And first, Olympic champion Adam Peaty has bravely opened up about his battles with alcoholism and depression. Peaty burst onto the scene at the 2014 Commonwealth Games, winning 2 gold medals, but following the difficult split from his long-term girlfriend in 2022, he didn't want to see a pool again after being broken by the sport. Since then, he's rediscovered his passion, even qualifying for the Paris Olympics 2024. In a statement, he said, "This is a real win for my team, my family and myself. We have come through the past 3 years of hell. I didn't want to see a pool again. The sport had broken me. I didn't know what route to go down and so many things got in my way, but now I'm waking up each day and enjoying my job. Who knows what the ending is going to be, but I'm having fun along the way. It may not end up as a fairy tale, but it might." Now, there's no one better to discuss all the showbiz news than assistant showbiz editor and good mate of mine, Amanda Devlin. Devers.
Did you get told to say that?
Good mate.
No one better.
There's no one better.
And the mates.
I lied about both of it, mate. Neither of them are true. I've got loads of people better than you. But you'll do for now.
Just put up with me.
Adam's admission about how difficult it is, he's found it all. It's refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is actually really refreshing. Normally, I hate when people moan about stuff, but actually...
I won't fall into my mental health moaning about stuff.
Sometimes, you know how we're talking about, like, you know, a Gen Zer who perhaps is just more than willing to moan about having to actually get out of bed and go and face normal kind of realities. But this is a sportsman who he's put his absolute everything into his talent, his skill of swimming. And... It just shows you can't just rock up and jump in the pool and do a few lengths. Like, he was putting his whole entire world life into it.
Yeah.
And it just became too much. And he had injuries, and then he had mental health issues from it. He had, you know, personal issues. And with all of that happening, I think he just needed to take time, go away. He found faith, interestingly.
He's got a cross tattooed on his torso.
Yeah, and he feels like a new person. So he's going into this, and it looks like this could be the start of a big comeback, which is unusual for the sport, for them to come back and actually end up as good. If you've been, you know, being an alcoholic, what you've done to your body during that time, and then to come back and be as fighting fit as he seems to be, it's really impressive.
Well, look, Michael Phelps went through a similar thing. He took some time away from the sport, came back and still... kicked ass. Mm-hmm. Don't say ass this early. Said it twice now. So there you go. But I think it's great for PT. He's still a young man, and it's great for a great example to other young men to come out and talk about their mental health issues.
Exactly.
No.
Oh no, totally. I think that it really is because he's using it as a way of look at how what I've achieved despite having gone through this. He calls it 3 years of hell.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it. You know, if he couldn't compete, he had to pull out at the last minute of the championships, and now to come around a year later and be in such a good position, it just shows you know how dedicated he is.
He's a real champion. No matter what he wins or doesn't win at the Olympics, he's a champion to me.
Yeah, now, but winner. Goals.
Speaking of winners, Philip Schofield, is it time to get him back on our tellies?
I feel really conflicted about this.
I don't know why. The answer is yes, it is time. So there. End of discussion. Shall we move on?
Okay, I can't ever see him going back to This Morning.
No, not This Morning.
That's never going to happen. He's never going to be on ITV.
He's bigger than This Morning. Doesn't need to be on that show.
All that has come about of this chat about him is because you've had his old mate, Fern Britton, on Celebrity Big Brother. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't sacked. She left of her own accord. But it's been a long time, 15 years, and she's gone back. And I think seeing her on the TV again has brought up a bit of nostalgia. You're so used to seeing these people every day in your home, aren't you?
Vince Schofield did nothing wrong. He did nothing wrong.
I think.
That's the point of it. He did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It was hounded out of TV because he did something that was unwise.
Because there was all of these investigations. If they're finding there's nothing wrong, then yeah, he didn't do anything wrong. But would it be appropriate for him to go back, having had all of the stories
maybe not to this morning, but to another TV show? Absolutely.
Where would you see him?
Anyway,
maybe a celebs go dating, or
that'd be good. He'd be great at celebs go dating. That's a fantastic idea. Oh, if Philly, if you're watching, that's what's next. Philly, my old macca. Let's go to a slightly sadder story now. Bruce Willis pictured holding his daughter Mabel.
Oh goodness, this really, really touched me. It's a really gorgeous photo of the two of them cuddled up. She's only 12, his daughter. We know that he's got dementia. It's been something that he has been struggling with for a while in his own private life, and then has come out and spoken about it, and his family have. I just looked at that and I thought, I lost my dad. And I think seeing them together at that point where you've got, she's only 12, you know, this is such a precious time when we know that he's not going to be around for forever. And I think how lovely to have those kind of memories together at the moment.
Absolutely. It's a lovely picture. Bruce, obviously, battling dementia at the moment. As you say, I don't believe he is going to be around for too much longer. But
I think it's really sad when you think about, you know, someone who was such an incredible actor. Mm. And to have that, that's the cruelty of that disease.
Yeah.
And he's someone, we're talking about Alex Petey and raising awareness and everything. Isn't it incredible that someone like Bruce can, in his own way, make such a difference? Because I would never have thought someone maybe as young as him and talented he is, how much money he's got, all of that doesn't matter.
Absolutely. It's raising awareness. My partner's mother just died of dementia as well. And I think it's not something that's spoken about enough. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Amanda Devlin, thank you very much.
You.
Now, you're watching The Independent Republic of JJ. Coming up, there's a bad smell lingering around the Tory party, and the political worldviews of young men and women are increasingly diverging. We're back in three. Welcome back. You're watching The Independent Republic of JJ and Isiobe. Now, the new criminal justice bill introduced by the bungling Kroela Braverman may mean homeless people could be arrested for the way that they smell. Critics of Braverman's bill say it's so broadly drawn that some could be considered a nuisance merely for sleeping in a doorway, looking as though they might intend to sleep rough, or having an excessive odour. 40 Conservative MPs are expected to rebel over the bill. Some think will criminalise homelessness. And Education Secretary Gillian Keegan has said that while she would support the policy, people should not be arrested just if they smell. Joining me are three roses who absolutely do not smell bad. Broadcaster Narinder Kaur, Director of Comms for the Henry Jackson Society, Megan Guitos, and commentator and journalist Samantha Smith. Now, who wants to go first? Megan, maybe I'll start with you. What the hell is going on? This is mental. So if someone smells, I know plenty of people who are not homeless, but they just stink. So there's a chance that they can end up being arrested now for that?
We saw with COVID the problem of when we make vague laws. Mm-hmm. I think this is really alarming. It's really scary that we're not being... I think it's a really wrong way to go. And it's a problem with constant governments over the last 15 years only planning for the next election. We're constantly treating the symptom and not the actual disease. How is this our approach to homelessness in 2024? Mm-hmm. There are a million reasons someone can be homeless and therefore smell. But it's absolutely wrong. Of course it's wrong. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, I was going to carry on.
Of course we need
to get a handle on aggressive begging, because for the one reason it is usually drug-related, we should be able to say that, and it can get quite alarming, especially for women walking alone in the street. Aggressive begging means aggressive begging. It's very intimidating to children, but this is ridiculous. I'm totally against it.
So hang on, the law is to criminalise homelessness or... Mm-hmm. All smelly people. I'm so confused.
So the law is meant to...
So what's a smelly bit got to do with
that? So it was designed to the government designed it to repeal the Vagrancy Act of 1841, I believe, which is 200 years old or so. And in a similar way to, for example, if you think about the Sexual Offences Act, how that decriminalised homosexuality between men over the age of 21, what the government is saying they intend to do is to decriminalise homelessness in a similar way to the Sexual Offences Act, because this is, you know, supposed to replace an outdated piece of law that has no practical application to the way that we deal with homelessness in the 21st century. However, as Megan, you rightly pointed out, the issue is with the vagueness of the policies behind this law, and that, you know, I was homeless at the age of 16, I slept in McDonald's, I worked three jobs to get through sixth form, and I know firsthand how utterly incompetent the current framework of legislation around homelessness is, particularly for young people. So, you know, it's possible for a 16-year-old who was under social services like myself, had social workers, to be declared voluntarily homeless and to be, you know, told that you are choosing this. This is a lifestyle that you've chosen as a child, as a vulnerable child under the Children's Act 1989. Mm. Those are issues that should be dealt with by policy. We shouldn't be talking about criminalising body odour or criminalising those, you know, that I understand criminal organised gangs in train stations and things like that being prosecuted for potentially putting those vulnerable people that are homeless at risk. But the issue with this is it's so short-sighted and it lacks the proper frame of, I would say, consultation from major organisations like Shelter, like Oasis.
So
and
what
others.
Should they have listened to? How could this...
Yes,
how Samantha, should
Samantha, Samantha, you've been homeless. What should they be doing now then?
I think that the first point of call is to, on both sides, Labour and the Conservatives, mm-hmm. we need to stop treating these kinds of issues, whether it's immigration, housing, race politics, as black and white, and as though, you know, we are either solving a problem or you know, the other side are creating a problem. Homeless people are not the enemy. They are not the villain. They are not a blight to society. It's a similar, you know, it all started with the anti-homelessness architecture about 20, 30 years ago. We need to start addressing the roots of that's adult mental health issues, drug rehabilitation, proper halfway houses and rehabilitation after prison or when people leave mental health facilities, social care, etc. And rather than, you know, as you said, addressing the symptoms, the people that we see blighting our streets that mm-hmm. are sleeping in doorways, etc., all of that sort of stuff, we need to think about why are young people, why are vulnerable individuals exiting organised care, whether that's social care, social services mm-hmm. or mental health facilities, and going straight onto the streets and into the hands of predatory gangs and people like that.
Narinda, one of the things that they're suggesting is that homeless people will be given a £2,000 fine. £2,500 fine?
Well, they wouldn't have the
precisely,
money.
Precisely. Right. It seems a ridiculous law. So why are the Tories pursuing this?
I don't know who they're trying to keep happy. Is it we've got a general election coming soon, or who they're trying to keep happy here?
I think that
homeless, they don't really harm anyone. They kind of keep themselves to themselves.
That's not the truth, though. Not when
really?
It comes to aggressive begging.
Yeah, I would say
that's not.
When you say aggressive begging, like I've just got back from Istanbul.
Drug motivated. But again, yeah. I think we need better rehabilitation for people on drugs, arresting them, fining them, moving them on. This helps no one. It doesn't
help. But rehabilitation, that costs money.
Yeah, yes,
there's a lot of does. Money will be involved in this.
Yeah. Well, as
and maybe we need long
as a few of you are disagreeing, let's move on to the next topic, which is about the increasing divergence between the sexes when it comes to politics. I mean, you three don't agree on anything, it seems, but it appears that men and women are becoming going very different ways. Men like me becoming more conservative. Women like you three are becoming more liberal. Narinda, I think you're the most liberal person.
You think?
I know. Yes, you're incredible.
I'm really not.
You're too liberal. Liberal
but
to a fault.
I think it can be toxic. I think that women, I actually do believe women have a role and men have their role. I'm sorry, I think these two are going to go mad. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I do. Especially with the whole, we can freeze our eggs and have babies when we want. No, actually, you can't. Women should be able to work and men stay at home. Actually, I think mums should stay at home. You see, I'm not that liberal. I'm actually quite old-fashioned when it comes
Narinda
to...
Narinda Carr, Conservative candidate 2024.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I honestly do
think
that.
Yeah,
so what's this report?
Yeah, what's the report?
Yes.
Come on, JJ.
Oh, is it the report? Sorry.
give us the facts.
Who's hosted today?
So men are becoming more conservative. More conservative.
Women are becoming more liberal. This is what they're saying with the younger generation. Megan, what do you think of this? You think there's
truth in this? I think it's really interesting. I think that it can be down to a number of factors. Is this just in the UK? Did you say?
It's just some research that suggests these trends.
Yeah, but I want to figure out why.
Well, I'm just asking you. Do you think women are more liberal than men?
If it's in the UK, society's changed massively over the last 5 years. Our demographics in this country have changed massively over the last 5 years. So I would always think, OK, what does demographic look like? However, I think a lot of women are thinking recently they've been duped a bit. By it all.
I agree. My daughter said the same. She goes, we're not believing.
Look, I think it's down to individual households, and I truly believe that. If a woman does not want to stay home and it works better for the woman...
I think that I love staying at home. All right,
let me hear from Samantha. Samantha?
Let's go to Samantha.
The pervasiveness of social media, I think, is obviously going to be playing a part in this. When young men, you hear about incel culture nowadays, and young men being drawn in by the likes of Andrew Tate and others, where, you know, they might not have many friends at school, they might not be very popular or athletic, and so they have these safe havens, these communities online that are able to make them feel like they are, you know, somehow special and important, and that they have a role to play, and that they can restore these traditional ideals. And then on the other extreme end of the spectrum, you have OnlyFans culture. You have young girls who are looking up to people like Kim Kardashian,
is an absolutely amazing businesswoman. She's one of the richest women. She's done.
I'm not doubting that, but I'm saying that when young girls are looking at the role models that they have now, and young men are looking at the role models that they have, it's understandable why these sort of divisions are forming.
It's ironic though. It's ironic that we're talking about the division between men and women, and we're saying there's some girls who do the OnlyFans. Women are doing OnlyFans for the men. They're not doing it for themselves.
I was going to come in on this point because that's what I kind of meant earlier, where women feel duped in a way. And it's not just about bringing up the babies and things like that, and the fact that they're still doing all the emotional labour, the house labour, and yet they're sometimes earning more, and the man's not really catching up as quickly as he should.
But should we not?
So then you'd be like, go back, hang on. And then when it comes to the OnlyFans stuff, the sexual liberation side of things, a lot of women now are coming out and it's like, I did the OnlyFans, I made $1 million.
Wow,
I still feel horrible.
Yeah.
I still feel horrible.
There's a dangerous...
I'm so sorry.
I love this conversation.
We've run out of time on that section, ladies, but you can keep talking afterwards, like women always do. I am joking.
Yeah, you are watching The Independent Republic of JJ. Here are my thoughts on the man who wants to have surgery to create a vagina for himself, but also... keep his penis. You won't want to miss it. Welcome back. You're watching the Independent Republic of JJ on Talk TV. It's now time for Taking the Mic. Now, in my 25 years as a journalist, yes, 25 years, although I look much younger than that, I thought I'd seen it all until now. Check this out. There's a man who wants to have surgery to create a vagina for himself. Fine. But he doesn't want to have his penis cut off. No. He's demanding he be given a vagina while also keeping his willy attached firmly in place. So he'd have both a vagina and a penis down there at the same time. Oh, and he wants the public to pay for it. Has the world gone completely bloody mad? So this geezer is a non-binary patient in Canada. Non-binary as in he thinks he's a mix of both genders, and he's actually suing health chiefs who are refusing to pay for the surgery. In court documents, he argues that forcing him... Actually, I think I should be referring to him as them, to be respectful. Forcing them to undergo binary surgery could be considered an illegal act of conversion therapy, as well as a violation of the Ontario Human Rights Code. Now, I've got no issues with anybody identifying as whatever they want to be. Pick your own gender. That's completely cool, but do just that. Pick one. In no way can anyone convince me that someone is mentally in a good space if they want to butcher their body and walk around with a willy and a fanny. And before people start telling me, oh, what about hermaphrodites? That's different altogether, because hermaphrodites are born with both male and female reproductive organs, so not just the bits on the outside. Now, predictably, LGBTQ rights groups and lefty lawyers have come out and screamed discrimination, exclusion, while refusing to acknowledge that this is a man. He was born a man, he'll die a man, and when his skeleton is dug up by scientists in the future, keen to learn about humans of the past, guess what?
his DNA and his structure will be presented as a man. Gender-affirming treatment has, in my opinion, gone far enough. Men can have surgery to look more feminine. Women can have operations to take hormones to appear more masculine. But if you allow this to go on and to say that people can have both bits, we are really going to be taking the mic. Still with me are my panel. Megan, this is nuts. No, like, are you... Okay, you're non-binary. No problem with that. But saying you want to have a vagina and a willy at the same time, because that's how you feel, and they expect us to pay for it, and don't say to me, but it's in Canada, so it doesn't matter. This could happen over here soon enough.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say this is in Canada, so it doesn't matter. I honestly don't know what the answer is, because...
The answer is, it's complete madness.
It is madness.
No, it's
there
not.
There is, like, an obsession... It is an obsession with, like... the physical with a lot of this.
Okay, let me put this to you. A woman wants bigger boobs.
Megan wasn't finished. Go on, Megan wasn't finished.
I wasn't finished. But amongst all of this, being trans, most doctors would agree, is an actual real, like, it's a serious thing. And like you mentioned intersex people earlier, science can do this stuff. And, you know, I have really am supportive of like the trans community, but there is no scientific backing for being non-binary.
I don't really care, because what the thing here is, woman wants bigger boobs, she gets bigger boobs. We could say where she was
but
born
the NHS
smaller
doesn't
boobs,
pay for it.
They do. There's a lot of instances where they do.
Very
a woman
few
wants
for
a long time, vagina not tightened, for... or she wants a vagina.
She pays for that.
They do that on the NHS.
No,
not
they
that
don't.
I've had that. Narinda,
you can't get your vagina tightened. Narinda, you are describing a woman having other works done to make herself feel more feminine or for more confidence, whatever. We're not talking about changing a woman's sex a woman's gender to a male gender, or a woman saying, I want a penis as well.
You said at the beginning, it's just bits.
Also, there's nuance to the vagina bit.
I just want to know, where's the vagina going to go? Like the penis, and then I don't know where the vagina bit will go.
We'll find out later. Samantha.
Can I just point out, there are cases where women will have breast reductions on the NHS, or they'll have restorative surgeries for their genitalia.
Yes.
I'll keep it.
You can say vagina. I've said it 30 times already.
But those cases where there's a medical need for it, that is paid for by the NHS. There have been cases where women have done it for cosmetic reasons and have blagged their way to get the NHS to pay for it, and then
Correct.
They've been vilified by the public and by the NHS.
Rightly
and they've,
so.
They,
Rightly
in
so.
Many cases, yeah. they've been criminally prosecuted. But,
Good.
You know, you take the example of hermaphroditism. There is still a biological sex with hermaphrodites. They still have XY chromosomes. Mm-hmm. They are still biologically male.
Yeah.
And I would say that a doctor has a duty of care to any person that thinks that they want to add a willy and a vagina to themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they should owe them a duty of care of investigating what underlying mental illness
Maybe
they clearly
have.
And if
Maybe
they don't,
they
no, they do,
and if they
yeah.
don't have a mental illness, then I don't think that we should be supporting the fetishization of biological sex
but
or gender or
absolutely
like that.
No.
Do you know that
aesthetic?
This debate has become, this is one person. This isn't the whole world. It's one person.
Narinda, one person. It starts one person and it spreads.
It's
how it works.
This is just hyper kind of faux rage.
I think, yeah, we talk out the trans.
We really do. We're talking about
0.01%
yes, the whole
and it,
world.
And it sets a precedent. That's
it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Gender is fluid.
If this person wins this case, then you're going to have more people come out. Saying,
it will be enshrined in law.
Yeah, exactly.
It will be enshrined in law that sets a precedent.
I don't like to demonise people.
We're not demonising. I'm not demonising.
I feel like that we attack and demonise and we talk far too much about it. We do demonise them.
No.
And you know what?
Narinda, this is the Independent Republic of JJ. We're not demonising anyone. Right here, I'm stating facts. This is someone born a male who wants to have a penis and a vagina. I'm not demonising that person.
Do what you want to do, but pay for it yourself.
Exactly. Pay for it yourself. That's it. That's not demonising. That's not demonising.
Is the money.
The problem is the public should not be paying for that. Now, let's move on. Johnny Mercer. He is being told he must give the names of sources about alleged murders of SAS members in Afghanistan. Megan, tell us more about this.
Yeah, so Johnny Mercer is... he passed on some information that was an accusation made against some members of the SAS.
Mm-hmm.
He is not going to blow the whistle on the whistleblower.
Good.
And I think that is very honourable. Mm. I do hope that whoever the whistleblower is that he's protecting is credible. And I would say that about any situation, because the SAS is some of the best trained in the world. Mm-hmm. And I hope that whoever has made these claims, there is back. But that's not for the public to decide. That is who's investigating to decide. Therefore, I don't think that person's identity. There's nothing in the public interest for Johnny Mercer to pass that on.
Yeah.
That is for those investigating to decide the validity and evidence of these claims being made. I think Johnny Mercer's doing the right thing, because otherwise we set a precedent.
Absolutely.
That a minister does not pass on this information.
And then
in 10 years' time, if journalists found that out,
exactly,
that he got the information, he would be rung over hot coals and possibly in prison too.
Samantha, let's
move on. Doing the right thing.
Let's move on to our final story. Balmoral, you can get afternoon tea at King Charles's gaff for £150.
How dare they?
Samantha.
Well, the royal family, for all the Republicans' trashing of the royal family, they are one of our greatest tourist
attractions.
Traps. Yeah,
oh,
the amount they bring. I mean, the Platinum Jubilee, the Queen's funeral, the billions that are brought in by the royal family every year
on account of the history
and the heritage. But, I mean, if we're talking about...
If you're saying that they bring in so much tourism, they bring in so much money... The king is a very rich man.
Yeah, the king
is an extremely rich man.
That's all devolved from the government.
Why are they charging?
And he invests it into his charities.
Oh, please. Oh, my God. We don't even know where half their money is.
Norinda, listen. Take the politics out. Take the politics out of this, Norinda.
Cost of living crisis. People are poor.
Norinda,
and the richest man in the world is charging.
He's not the richest man in the world. He's not the richest man in the world, Norinda.
Just speak facts.
Look, the fact is.
He's one of the richest men in the country.
Norinda, the fact is, the royal family as a whole. I'm not a royalist, but the royal family as a whole cost us a lot less than the money they bring in by tourism.
That's
completely true. Norinda, I'm stopping you.
We don't know where half their money is. Offshore accounts.
I think it's great.
Samantha, would you pay £150 to go and have high tea there?
I absolutely would.
I'm not going to pay a rich man.
I asked Samantha.
Pay a rich man.
You don't have to pay.
We've got a lot of pay. She's the smartest one on the panel.
I absolutely would pay £150. I think it's, you know, people are always talking about how the royal family needs to be more accessible, needs to be more available to the public. This is a great opportunity to learn about our
Norinda, cut her mic. Norinda, goodbye.
Them.
Goodbye, Norinda. Bye. Norinda's never coming back again. Don't you worry about it. I'll take care of that. You've been watching Independent Republic of JJ Nishobi. Mike's back tomorrow. It's been a true pleasure and an honour to step into big man's shoes. But my time as dictator is over. Good night.